Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Off the First. It is today, February the 9th, 2023. Happy start to the week of the Waste Management Phoenix Open, now known as the WM Phoenix Open. First elevated event that's got a full field. Big week here happening in the world of golf. Very excited about it. We are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort in French Lick, Indiana. We have two topics to talk about, as the name of the show implies. Unfortunately, the first round got delayed by a little bit more than like an hour and a half because of a frost delay. Hopefully, they'll be able to get most of the field through at TPC Scottsdale Stadium today. That may spill over into Friday a little bit. And then things start to get interesting if there's a frost delay on Friday, because they're in a very tight schedule to get this thing done on Sunday in time to finish before the Super Bowl kicks off in nearby Glendale, meaning there's a lot riding on every single minute of the schedule. Very interesting kind of case study. And the field was also expanded by a few players this year, because all of the top 125 that were eligible from last year's FedEx Cup are eligible to play in this field. So they have oversubscribed. They have 134 players in the field, two more than 132, which might not seem like a whole lot, but a tee time a day, 10 to 12 minutes apart, can add up over the first 2 days. And that might be the spillover into the next day and then the next day. And that can mean some problems going into Sunday. So lots to think about there. That's not even one of the stories we're talking about. Just a very interesting logistics thing going on in golf right now, given this week and given what's on the line. Everybody obviously wants to be able to play at a pace they probably want to play, instead of feeling a little bit rushed with $20 million on the line, $3.6 million to the winner. That all said, the two topics for today. First one deals with the official World Golf Ranking and kind of the ongoing wrangling between different elements of the game and different stakeholders and who thinks it's right and who thinks it's not. And a little bit of conversation for me about what's about to change pretty dramatically in the official World Golf Ranking about 7-8 weeks from now. But I want to prep you for it, because the world ranking is going to look a whole heck of a lot different after the Masters, and certainly as we get toward the U.S. Open, than it has in the past. But in the meantime, there's debate over who's number one in the world. And the media assembled at TPC Scottsdale asked kind of this question, or at least one person did. Asked that all about, you know, who's number one? Do they think they're number one? And asked that of Rahm and Scheffler and McIlroy. And McIlroy's the world number one. And so he was asked, hey, are you the best golfer in the world? And he said, yes. And he explained, quote, because I feel that way. I'm playing well. I feel like consistency-wise, I've been as good as I've ever been in my career. I think the results speak for themselves as well, over not just the past 6 months, but really the past 18 months, post Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits. I feel like I've been on a really good run of form since then. And if you'll remember, at the Ryder Cup, that's when Rory kind of had this emotional outburst that he kind of let everyone down and didn't want to let people down and really wanted to stand up for this European team that he wasn't playing well against. They were getting smoked by the Americans by a record margin. And really, that was kind of a catalyst maybe to the kind of player he has become in the last 18 months. And as he said, he has become more consistent. And as he talked about ahead of the tournament, he has higher highs, perhaps, but definitely lower lows. And so he plays in a much tighter range now in terms of where he finishes, and that makes it extremely impressive. It also makes it really good for the official World Golf Ranking, because the way the points are distributed. And if you play well consistently, you rack up points. And if you are consistently racking up points, it's an average-based system. It's not a total-based system. It's an average. So if you rack up points consistently over whatever number of starts that you make, you don't really feel subject to the same kind of swings other people might get when their points start to deprecate over this 104 or two-year rolling period that they measure the ranking. So it makes a whole lot of sense. Consistency is what gets you to the top of the world and top of the world ranking. Scottie Scheffler said that at the American Express. What do the best players in the world do? They are consistent from week to week. They're consistent in how they play. No matter where they play or why they play or who they're playing against, they do well. And that is the measure of a great player according to the official World Golf Ranking. But there is kind of a trickiness to all of this, right? Because in our world, we don't look at who's the best on a long-term basis, even though golf measures our greats in decades. We don't measure them in years. We measure them in decades. I mean, think about Jack and Tiger, the greatest of all time. They were great for 2.5 decades, if not 3 decades. And we look at that as being greatness personified. So consistency is rewarded in the long haul, but we have a tendency to try to think of who's the best right now. And I would also throw Hogan into that mix, by the way, pre and post accident. He became a better golfer post accident, which is also incredible. But if you're trying to think about it now in our culture of, hey, who's the best at the moment? Well, maybe the official World Golf Ranking isn't a good measure of that, because we have tournaments every single week in golf. And increasingly, we're going to see more players, more of the best players competing against each other more often in a more compact schedule. We've talked about that on the show, that the next 8 weeks really leading through to the Masters, it's going to be a lot of high-end fields that are going to be competing against each other in these designated events leading into the Masters, which is the first men's major. And you're going to see that increasingly. So there's going to want to be more of a debate of, through of that number of events, who's the best player? Why are they the best player? Who's hoisted the most trophies? Is it consistency that matters? And so that question was kind of put to Scottie Scheffler, who is currently number two in the world. And I think if you ask people right now, who are the two best players on the planet, they would tell you Jon Rahm and Rory McIlroy. Now, A and B may vary between person to person, but it's one of those two that you're number one, and it's one of those two that you're number two. No offense to Scottie Scheffler, who won four times last year, but it ain't him. And so he said, quote, right now I'm ranked number two, but I would say I'm not playing the second best golf in the world. I think Rory and John are pretty much neck and neck for playing the best golf in the world right now. So the rankings are funny. It's just an algorithm. But I don't like being number two. I'd rather be number one, end quote. And that makes sense, right? So there are things about the world ranking that allow you to move up tremendously quickly. And those things can happen when you win a lot of tournaments in a row, because you gain the first place points, you leapfrog a whole lot of people, people lose points from old starts, and all of a sudden, you have way more points than everybody else. That's how Scottie Scheffler got to be number one in the world. And he knows that. That makes all the sense, that once you kind of run through how it works, he got there. So why isn't Jon Rahm number one in the world? Well, the tournaments that he won were relatively weak in terms of fields, for the most part. And he fell victim, unfortunately, to the timing of the changes in the official World Golf Ranking, which were that they weakened the point value for every event that Rahm won since, in the four of seven that he won. Those events had weaker first place points than they would have before the ranking valuation changed. So he could have been number two, maybe even number one in the world, had he enjoyed those points. But he wasn't awarded those. And meanwhile, we still have a system that has, basically going back to before last August, all the old school points. So it's going to take a while for the new way of evaluating tournaments to kind of kick through. And so Rahm is not a beneficiary of that. He actually gets hurt because of that. He probably should be number two or three in the world based on the ranking if he had gotten the old points. And Rahm knows that too. And he's totally aware of that. But I think there seems to be this kind of notion of, oh, well, the world ranking doesn't identify the best players. As Scottie Scheffler said, it's just an algorithm. It's just a math problem. It's really not even an algorithm. It's just a fancy math problem. And so if that's the case, and that fancy math problem is oriented toward a two-year cycle and really toward a long-term view of a golfer, then that maybe isn't meant to tell you who the best player in the world is right now. It's meant to tell you who the best player in the world has been over the last 2 years, really over the last 18 months, because the points come off and they become less valuable. It's just not meaningful. So, yeah, okay, well, we've got a number one in the world that has played the most consistent golf. Well, that's how that works. That's how this ranking system rewards players. But we as golf fans don't tend to think about the best player in the world as the one that's the most consistent. We think about the best player in the world as the one that wins the most and wins the most important stuff. Right now, that's not Rory McIlroy. He's not winning everything that's important. He's not winning majors. He hasn't won one since 2014, but he has won the FedEx Cup a couple of times since then. He has three FedEx Cup titles. You've had Jon Rahm, who has won a major, but then hasn't followed that up yet and does rack up wins, but a lot of them come in weaker tournaments, at least of late, relative to some of the other stuff he's performed well in his career. You've got Scottie Scheffler, who beat a bunch of strong fields to get to number one in the world. So there are different ways to get there. And then Scheffler, after winning the Masters, hasn't won since. That's not a knock on him, just hasn't happened. Does that mean he's not one of the best players in the world? Or does that mean he was one of the best in 22 and isn't now? I don't think that's the case either. He still put up tons and tons of good finishes. So what I'm trying to get at is that the official World Golf Ranking isn't here to tell us who's the best today. It's here to tell us who's the best over the last 18 or 24 months. And that's why the major championships use it to determine players who get in to major championship fields, because they want the best players, not necessarily just flashes in the pan. They have some qualifiers for those types of things, particularly for the US Open, the Open Championship, right? And then you've got stuff that's in-season points lists and top five at a certain points in time. The USGA added some new qualification criteria for the US Open to get exemptions this year and the Women's Open that allows for kind of short-term performance, relatively speaking. But the majors and the world ranking are trying to identify the best players in the long haul. And this does that. The system does that. Got an email from, I forget the gentleman's name, I'm sorry, but he emailed me saying about he created a ranking system called the Universal Golf Ranking, which tries to account for golf performance on every single major men's tour in the world. That doesn't mean just the participating tours currently in the official World Golf Ranking. He also added in the PGA Tour Champions and LIV Golf, and he tried to do it as a system of head-to-head comparisons. It's kind of similar to the Sagarin system. Sagarin does basketball rankings, does all kinds of sports rankings, and has a golf system that's really based on when players compete head-to-head, who wins. And that's over, I believe, an 18-month time period. And then they identify the best players based on that. And there are flaws in that system, too. But the idea is a different way of thinking about golf performance as who did you beat and how often did you beat them? And if you beat them more often than not against the better players, then are you better? And I disagree with that system. I find it interesting, but I disagree with it because you don't play against one player at a time. You don't play heads up in professional golf unless it's a match play situation. So that ranking system has its flaws, although it does identify a lot of the same players as great. So that's something to really keep in mind. It matters the context in which you're trying to find greatness. And that doesn't mean the official World Golf Ranking is bad. It just means it defines greatness differently than maybe someone else might if you ask them to draw up their own system. I think it's interesting, but if you look at our rankings of the model that I've done for the last almost 3 years now, going back to March 2020, most weeks on the PGA Tour, someone inside the top 11, 12, or 14 of my ranking wins. And in many weeks, it's in the top 3 or 5. And that model rewards performance over a 1 year and 2 year time period based on the quality of your competition. Those players tend to win. The more consistent players tend to win. It's hard to win, but the more consistent ones tend to win. It's not the ones who come out of nowhere. Those are few and far between in this era of professional golf. Even though golf is more talented and deeper than ever, it is the best and most consistent players who tend to win golf tournaments. All right, let's get into the second story for today. We're going to do something a little bit... We'll hold off the live topic for tomorrow, actually. That'll give us something to end the week with. I want to talk about what's coming up in terms of how golf coverage is changing on TV. And I don't know if you've been watching the last couple of weeks, but CBS has been airing the weekends, and they've tried to do some things that are a little bit different. One thing they did at Pebble Beach that I thought was cool but didn't necessarily work on TV was a shot predictor, where they would show a player hitting a shot, and then instead of showing the ball in the air, they showed the player's reaction and pinpointed, more or less, based on the wind conditions and the data that they got off of a launch monitor, where the ball was going to stop. And they tried to predict it, and it was pretty eerie how good it was. But it's also, again, just kind of a projection of data and putting a point on a map based on that and then seeing what the ball reacts on the surface, because you don't necessarily know about the surface and stuff like that. But it was cool, but it was also weird. It was like, the point of golf isn't predicting where the ball is going to go. If you're watching on TV, it's watching where the ball goes. So it was a cool innovation, but it didn't necessarily work. And then you had the Farmers Insurance Open. You had Max Homa doing an in-round interview. He put in a pair of AirPods or AirBuds or whatever, and was talking to the folks at CBS as he was walking down the fairway. It was awesome. It was really, really enjoyable. And then you had a couple of interviews during Pebble Beach that were a little bit illuminating, I think were really fun. CBS and even Golf Channel, to a degree, are trying to come up with new things. And they've got the Netflix series Full Swing coming out, so that's going to draw a whole lot more attention, and they're filming for that, so a lot is being filmed that doesn't even ever make it onto the broadcast. There are a whole lot more ways that golf is trying to come up with and engage with to get fans to know these players a little bit better, get to know the sport a little bit better. And I think there's been some pushback on that to a degree, not necessarily about Full Swing, although there was some conversation about that. We'll talk about that here, but also about some of the new features CBS is doing. So some of the players are kind of all for doing the in-round interviews, even if they're in contention. Like, all right, you know, what's the difference if I'm talking to Trevor Immelman and Jim Nance than talking to my caddy walking down the fairway when we're going to wait anyway on our next shot? That's the attitude of some. Others, not so much. They want to be in the zone. They don't want to break their concentration, break out of the routine of what they're doing, even if for 3 or 4 minutes. And they're not going to volunteer to do that. And I think McIlroy is somewhere in between there. Again, kind of often the case. But he said, after the interviews that he saw with Homa and then Keith Mitchell did one at Pebble, he said, quote, "It would take a little bit of convincing for me, but I'd certainly be open to it. But given the last couple of weeks and how well I think it's been received, I'd certainly be open to it," end quote. And I think McIlroy and many of the other players are cognizant of the importance of how the product is presented, how people engage with it matters. I mean, that's why Full Swing is out. That's why we're trying to do things a little bit differently in golf in terms of television production. That's why there are designated events. All of this stuff is to try to present a better product to the fans that gives people a better look at the golfer and sees them more often, right? So that all kind of makes sense. But someone like John Rahm's like, not so much. I don't think that's going to work for me. And he may never do one of the in-round interviews. He might do one eventually. He might come around to it. I don't know. We'll see how that works out. And the next time he's in contention, which could be pretty much any time, what he decides to do. But I really do appreciate what's been coming our way in the last few weeks of some changes to how golf is presented on TV. I think last year was truly awful for NBC. I mean, it was really bad and people got on them all the time about how the broadcasts were filled with commercials and oftentimes lazy and bad commentary from different elements of the commentary team. And whether you like it or not, Roger Maltby and Gary Cook, who are great people and have done a great job for 3 decades, weren't entitled to have that job forever, just like I'm not entitled to do any job forever, and neither is anybody else. And so they decided to move on and put other people in those positions. Now, you may not agree with who those positions have been filled with, and we'll see how that works out when NBC starts to take over telecasts soon. But there has been a lot of changeover in recent years in who calls golf and what we're trying to do to present to people more information and get them to know the players a little bit better. And I appreciate that they're trying to do that. And the reality is, this was brewing before LIV. There have been all these kinds of conversations on golf Twitter, golf social media over the last few years of why golf doesn't do more to engage their players and fans during television. And yes, it is a silent sport often. And yes, we have tried things like miking up players and getting them to wear battery packs and stuff like that. Well, that can be uncomfortable if you're hitting a shot. So being able to put a pair of AirPods in your ear for 3 minutes and talk to somebody, well, some of those top players have gotten used to that because they've been competing in the match series with TNT and Turner Sports. And so they've gotten used to, hey, this really isn't that intrusive. And if you hit balls on the range with AirPods in, what's the difference? Other than maybe it messes up your routine. So I think you're going to get a lot more takers for that than you are for wearing a mic during a round or potentially revealing some kind of secrets in your conversations with your caddy that could be aired on television. That seems the more likely outcome. So, hey, that's totally cool. We want to see more of that. And I think the players have kind of figured out, you know, this is an opportunity. This isn't necessarily a problem, because if more people pay attention, you get better sponsors. You get better sponsors, you get more money. If you get more money, hey, you're pretty happy at the end of the day. I mean, that's what you're doing this for, trophies and money, right? So I think they get it. And I think we're going to see that in the Full Swing concept. I've seen some people who have watched early release trailers and early release versions of the full season. And the people are going to really find it interesting. And there are a lot of people to root for, a lot of villains. You can figure out who that's going to be for yourself. But McIlroy said, quote, "I sort of took the attitude of see how the first season of Full Swing works out. See if I like it, like the idea, feel comfortable letting cameras get into my life a little bit more. But I had a good chat with the executive producer, Chad Mumm, in the summertime. Obviously, with everything that's going on in the world of golf, he just said having my voice in there in some way could just add a layer of context that wasn't there already," end quote. And then he added, I made sure that the parameters were pretty much like, look, you can film me at, you're not coming to my house, you're not coming in my car, you're not coming anywhere near my family, but you want to do some stuff with me at golf tournaments, totally fine. They were the ground rules that were sort of set, and here we are, end quote. And I think that kind of applies to different golfers. Again, what's your comfort level? Do you want your family exposed? Do you want your personal life exposed? Do you want people to see the inside of your house? Or if you have a private jet or those types of things, your boat, stuff like that. Everyone's a little bit different. But if the end product helps to tell the story of a behind the scenes story of golf, then that's a good thing. And that it can still be done within the confines of people's comfort levels that are, again, vary from golfer to golfer. That's going to be a net positive. And like I said, everything I've heard about this show, this docuseries that's going to be on Netflix, is net positive, is wonderful. There's a show that's airing, the Golf Unfiltered podcast that airs on Golf News Net Radio. If you want to listen to that, you can check it out at golfnewsnet.com/GNN-radio. And you can listen to a conversation that the host Adam Fonseca and Nikki Dunigan had with Chad, the executive producer for the show, Full Swing. And he goes and talks about a whole bunch of different topics. I think it gets you really revved up for what's going to be coming down the pipe very, very soon. And there's just, we're in a good time here as golf content consumers. There's never been a better mix. There's never been more ways to learn more about golfers and be engaged with the sport without necessarily just having to watch play-by-play of golf on TV. And I think that's a good thing. And hopefully you find it as a good thing as well. All right, that's going to do it for us today on 2 of the First. Thank you so much for the pleasure of your time, whether you're watching or listening. If you catch us through a podcast service, please give us 5 stars on the podcast service of your choice, or leave a comment and a review. Helps us reach more people. If you're watching on YouTube, smash that subscribe button or a like button. We would appreciate that as well. And we're going to come back with another show tomorrow, wrap up the week. We'll talk live logos and live team names. We'll have a little discussion about that. And then we'll kind of get into the action of day one plus whatever of the WM Phoenix Open. I'm Ryan Balanchine saying thank you for watching, and we will talk to you tomorrow on 2 Off the First.